This is Radio Omnibus, WFDU-FM's celebration of the arts and literature. Today, Susan Teltzer-Schwartz takes us on The Metro Beat, an examination of what's happening in and around New York City.
Good morning and welcome to The Metro Beat. This morning we have two guests. We're going to speak with Morgan Aronson, who's the librarian at the Masonic Lodge on 23rd Street in Manhattan. It's a lot more than just a Masonic Lodge. She will explain, as will her colleague, Catherine Walter, who is the curator of the museum located in that wonderful building where the lodge and the library exist. And we're going to talk a little bit about Freemasonry, the history of it, the mystery of it, the treasures involved in it, around it, and about it, including the fact that the opera, The Magic Flute, has several of the symbols in the opera, and they pay homage to some extent to the Masons. And I welcome both of you women this morning. I'm glad to have you with me.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Morgan, why don't you start and tell, for somebody who would be wanting to visit, why they would come to see the lodge and the museum and the library and learn about the particular significance of this lodge, which is extensive?
Well, that's a wonderful question, Susan. We are in a historic landmark building on West 24th Street, and we have entrances on 24th and 23rd Street and 6th Avenue. The building itself is beautiful, it's historic, it's has a number of different lodge rooms inside that are decorated according to each lodge. And our library, which is my favorite, is the gem of the institution.
And so the street address, though, actually.
Sure. It's 71 West 23rd Street.
Right. And you're on the 14th floor, right?
That's right.
Okay. And the phone number is 212-337-6620. Is
correct.
That correct?
Yes.
And the email address for information is nymasoniclibrary, all one word, .org, right?
That's the website. The email
oh, I'm sorry. I meant to say
info.
Website. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Yeah, info at.
That's right.
Right, okay. So the website is without the info, and the email is info at. Okay.
That's right.
Okay, so we're ready to go, and here we are, and we are in this gorgeous building, which you own, right?
That's right. The Grand Lodge of New York owns the building. We are a part of Grand Lodge. And we have the 14th floor, which is the entire floor. It's a wonderful floor. But the building is interesting because it's divided into two buildings. There's the 24th Street side and the 23rd Street side. So some of the floors are rented out, though it is owned by Grand Lodge.
Mm-hmm. And they're meeting rooms, historical meeting rooms with beautiful artwork and replicas of marble pillars and gold leafing and so
that's
on.
That's right. One of them even has a stuffed polar bear outside, and that's Kane Lodge, and they're the Explorer's Lodge. So they are each decorated according to the specific lodge.
And there are tours, free tours, right?
That's right. Masons volunteer to give tours every day of the week, Monday through Friday, and we are open to the public, so anybody can come on in and have a tour.
All right. Now, aside from having the tour and seeing these rooms and having the significance of the way some of them are set up and so on explained, which we will talk a little bit about as well, there is a wonderful museum upstairs. And Catherine, why don't you talk a little bit about the museum?
Absolutely. We have 39 exhibit cases around the building. Some of the amazing resources we have include a handwritten letter by George Washington, which is Masonic in nature. He was a very prominent Freemason. We have material that goes back to the late 1700s, and in fact, some material that goes back to the 1400s. The exhibits cover things as such as freedom, which is a very big focus for Freemasonry. We have an enormous jewelry exhibit. There's Knights Templar exhibits. It's not an ending. We have a bust that was carved by Gutzon Borglum, who is the man who made Mount Rushmore.
And you have letters and books and a lot more than
sure.
jewels. I mean, it's the different pins and the different aprons, and all of which used to be pretty much hoarded as secretive. Is that right?
It was for a while. Mm-hmm. Masonry was very public very early on in the history of our country, and then there was an event in the early 1820s that sparked the first anti-Masonic political, the first second political party in the United States was the anti-Masonic party due to this event, and a lot of Masonry began to become a little bit more private. Membership was always somewhat private, but the pride in membership was diminished for a little while. However, the very next president after this event who was elected was Andrew Jackson, who was Grand Master of Tennessee, the Grand Lodge of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So that period didn't last very long, but it left this lingering thing in people's minds that there's something nefarious about the Masons.
Right. So let's be clear that people understand that it began really as almost local fraternities of stonemasons, and so there were the qualifications of being a stonemason and the interaction that stonemasons had with the people that with whom they dealt, and they had a certain, it's a sociological history to a large extent of craft guilds and so on. Is that fair to say?
I think so. Essentially, it was guilds of stonemasons, and we would call them now operative stonemasons because, in fact, they were actually stonemasons.
Right.
Versus speculative, which is what we call masons today, because they're not literally stonemasons in their job, in their trade.
Right, and they are men.
Yes, it is a fraternity.
Right, and you must believe in God, not any particular God,
but a God, right?
Right.
This believing in one God is a landmark of Freemasonry here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And is it still true that a copy of the Bible must be open, available in each lodge?
You know what? That is a question for Catherine. I'm not sure.
Yes, it would be considered a sacred tome, not necessarily a Bible, mm-hmm, but some writ of holy words. So if a lodge happens to be mostly Jewish, it might be the Torah on the altar, it might be the Quran, it might be all three, but there must be, that's one of the lights of the lodge, is the holy tome.
Right.
The word of the supreme being. And they actually say supreme being so that it doesn't offend anybody that doesn't use the word God. So,
and yet I seem to remember hearing from you ladies and also from my reading that the Catholic Church isn't or wasn't happy with Masonry. Was it because of the secret aspects of it or...
I believe it had more to do with the rise of the idea that the Freemasons were gathering more money and power in Europe than the Church, and there was a papal bull that was put out, and they saying that if they were Catholic, they could not join the Masons or they would be excommunicated. Mm. In this time period, I believe the bull has been revoked. I'm not completely sure about that, but I know that there are Catholics who are members.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when you said George Washington was not the first Mason, but he was also not the only famous one, I mean, people like Mozart and Norman Vincent Peale and the comedian Red Skelton and on it goes. I mean, the list of well-known people is very extensive. And I think it's interesting because the variety of well-known people from backgrounds and professional involvements is so varied that it emphasizes the basic camaraderie and need to share going through the rites, if you will. I mean, I know some of the rooms are laid out in a way that the folks who have not gone through the different degrees sit as ordinary people in benches on the side. Am I saying this incorrectly? The rank and file, right, would sit along the sides of some of the...
Well, the member, yeah, to a certain extent, yeah, the membership would be sitting on the sides of the room, and the activity happens in the center of the large room.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a degree happening, the man who's going through the degree would be in the center of the room. That's where processions happen, coming into the room. And but the people, if they're in the lodge, when the lodge is in a closed meeting, all of those members are Freemasons.
Right, and you.
If it's an open meeting, it can be other people.
Oh, people can come into an open meeting.
Open meetings include presentations of awards.
Oh, really?
Sometimes then they'll have a collation after.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, there's wives and friends who come to help honor whoever is being honored by the lodge. It's generally the basic meeting, business part of the lodge meeting is usually closed.
Yeah. Morgan, you wanted to say something.
Well, you mentioned that the Masons come from all walks of life, and I think that's really important to highlight because the main purpose of Freemasonry is self-development and to find knowledge and truth. And that comes from all different class levels, all different social studies.
And self-improvement, right?
Yes, and self-improvement, exactly. But the point is not only for yourself to improve, but to extend that teaching and learning to others. It's said that it's not enough for you to gain the knowledge, but you must also impart that knowledge to others.
And not just brothers, but to the community, right?
That's right. There's a wonderful quote that says, Freemasonry expects each Mason to transform his interior illumination into exterior brightness.
Oh, I like that. And then the main symbol, if it is the main symbol, is the Masonic square and compass combined. Is that, it makes a triangle?
Right, it's very recognizable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
With a G in the middle.
And their implements are a large portion of what the symbols are. Is that correct? The tools of the trade.
That's right. Well, it comes from the original stonemasons and the foundation of Freemasonry.
All right.
Yes, and they use those tools to teach moral lessons at this point. So the various operative Masonic tools, or the operative tools, are used to teach, for example, the gavel and the gauge teach lessons of self-discipline and time management. The plum reminds a Mason to conduct himself with dignity, guiding his actions by the square of virtue, and meeting and treating other people as equals on the level, as they say. The trowel spreads the cement of friendship and brotherly love, and reminding Masons that humanity is a common family under the Creator.
Well, and what about the all-seeing eye, the significance of the eye? Is that... the deity, or is that a specific Masonic?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is represented the deity that you and people always assume that the dollar bill with the eye is Masonic, but that is more the eye of Providence, which existed long before the Masons were using the similar concept, in the sense that we're not just here by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You are being watched in some way. And it's a positive symbol. It's always surrounded by radiance on the certificates and the aprons. But the eye is usually very prominent on the apron and on the certificates as well.
And the organization as a whole is intent in today's world in disseminating the fact that there isn't magic. It's not a magical society, and it's not a cult. It's
right.
I mean, because there were erroneous associations to that effect.
Right. It's not a religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a cult, and that is something we hear fairly frequently. It's a fraternal association.
Mm-hmm.
At its core.
Although Houdini was a member, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Now the other thing is that talk a little bit, if you will, about the degrees and the fact that when I came to visit, I told you that my father and grandfather and uncles and several members of my family had been Masons and even had been masters and past masters, and took great pride in going through the degrees, rising as they acquired the different levels of knowledge and acceptance and honors. But in those days, it was more secretive because there was not a dearth of members, and there was a desire for this close-knit special handshake, special devotion one to the other, to be not shared among those who were not brothers. Now, the impression I have is because the popularity of the Masonic involvements has dwindled, that they're courting more aware, interested individuals to participate in these rituals and to understand them and accept them as their own. Is that fair?
Yes, to a certain extent. The American Freemasonry has always been a little bit more open than the European Freemasonry. But yes, the membership has been lowered in the last years, but it is actually on the rise again. There's always more involvement after or during war times when soldiers sort of miss that camaraderie between each other. But the privacy element, you know, the special grip sort of came from the operative Masons time period, where the grip meant I've learned up to this stage of how to set a stone or how to level a stone.
Oh, I see.
So they wouldn't have to go through any tests when they arrived at a new work site.
You mean the grip inferred that you were qualified?
Right.
I
said,
see.
Okay, I don't have to, like, try you out. You already know the grip.
Mm-hmm,
and that's
mm-hmm.
the secret. The secrets, the words and the grips that they pass are the things that will say, okay, yes, we're on the same level in terms of our membership. And there is something quite appealing about, you know, joining a group that, you know, we know the grip and you don't, sort of.
Well,
in the sense that there's a fellowship that transcends time, too, because you know that in the early 1700s, these same handshakes were being given between men, and you assume in the future it's the same thing.
Right.
So, yes, they are reaching out more. It was always called the quiet fraternity because they don't proselytize. They would prefer to have men who say, wait, what is that? I'm really interested. Let me go find out, rather than just going out on the general street and saying, hey, join us. Because they want men who are interested and who are in it for the right reasons.
Right,
yes.
Right. And in the rooms that they show, it says in my notes that there are no windows. Is there any significance to that? It said there are a dozen
rooms. Not really.
Rooms. No.
It's really more because they have different, they have ceremonies that, you know, sometimes they have to be in the complete darkness while they change things, or, you know, it's not a windowed lodge. Right.
And it says at one end there are two pieces of stone, each about the size of a cinder block, one uncut and the other finished, and that you take a good man and polish the rough edges. I like that.
Right, it's very poetic.
Yeah, so it obviously the significance is exactly that, right?
That's right. It's very, it's right off the cuff there. It's the rough stone and the hewn stone, and it represents the man before and after and during and through the degrees and how he progresses.
Right.
And what they're supposed to be doing actually is using that as a metaphor that they're supposed to change their soul or their persona into a building block for the temple not built by human hands for after they pass away, so that they will not be, you know, rage-filled or, you know, things that don't help.
A solid foundation.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. And also, it's been pointed out that the eye on the dollar bill is not a Masonic symbol, and the opticians use the eye, and that it isn't exclusively in any way a Masonic symbol. It signifies what one would expect. It's an overseeing, greater being image, more
right.
or less, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, we should mention the women and what developed for the women, if you will.
Sure, I can tell you about one organization,
Please.
Evening Star. A lot of women join, wives, daughters. They're very active. They hold their own meetings. And essentially what they do is they do a lot of charity work. They do a lot of the same things that the men do, but they, because Freemasonry is a fraternity, they're not allowed to join. But the Order of the Eastern Star is a very active organization, and they do a lot of really great work. And there are a number of events where they're, the women and men are allowed together in the same room. Just recently, the installation of the new Grand Master for Grand Lodge of New York happened, and the wives and the daughters and friends and family were all there in the same room to witness it, and it was a really wonderful ceremony. So the Order of the Eastern Star is just one organization. I believe there's also the Rainbow Girls. Is that right, Catherine?
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah, the Order of the Amaranth is the other adult women's organization, and their main charity focus is diabetes. And then the children's group include the International Order of Triangles. The boys group is the Dimolay group, and there's also the Rainbow Girls. So there's two girls groups in New York and one boys group.
Girls being youngsters, students.
Younger, yes.
Yeah. And would you say that the age group runs the gamut for the average lodge? I mean, they're not primarily older or younger. It's a wide spread, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Now, the other thing we didn't address, and that's my fault, is that there's a route going back to King Solomon's temple. And the story that happened in 1900, late 1900s, can you talk a little bit about that? Because some of the rooms, I think, have adornments that pay respect, as it were, to King Solomon's temple. Is that right?
Yes. Actually, King Solomon's temple is one of the most central symbols of the Masonic fraternity, being that it was the most spectacular building that was ever built, using a lot of the same type of symbolism that I was talking about with the different trowels and, you know, the different working tools of an operative Mason. And so, in fact, the lodge is also reflect the idea that once it's a closed lodge, it essentially is also symbolic of King Solomon's temple in that there is no chair in the north, which is where the mountain was, so no light came from the north where King Solomon's temple was actually built, and then also symbolizing in another sense the entire world. So when a lodge is meeting, they're not just meeting in a little room in the symbolism of the meeting.
Right. Morgan, talk a little bit about the accessibility of the library to people who want to do reference work or just want to immerse themselves a little bit in pictures and history.
Sure,
and
sure.
So how would one go about that?
Well, we are a public library, so anybody can walk in off the street, come upstairs to the 14th floor and use our room, use our reading room, use our books, use our material. We don't require appointments to see anything. We do have wonderful books, many with the symbols and imagery related to Freemasonry, many to do with the history and the historical events surrounding different moments in Freemasonry. And we also have a wonderful archive collection. So if anybody would like information on their grandfather who was a Freemason, we may have something with his name on it, whether it's a return from a lodge detailing that he was one of the first founding members of the lodge to his certificate.
So you don't need a reader's card or anything like that?
No, you do not. You don't need any letters from universities of vowing that you are a real researcher. You just need an interest in the material and patience while we find it.
Right. And you don't, books don't go out, though?
Not to non-Masons. If you are a New York Mason in good standing, then you are able to check out a book, depending on whether the book is circulating or not. But we do have a fairly large collection of older books, 19th century and before, which do not circulate.
Right. I neglected to mention with some of the famous Masons, and I know one could go on and on, but I just think it's interesting that Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia was a Mason and John Jacob Astor was a Mason, and the names keep popping up, you know, and you kind of say, oh. Not because It makes it, it not because it validates it, but just because it's a broad spectrum of people who concentrate an interest in a very specific area. And I seem to remember associating work that the Masons did with blood drives as one particular charity that they supported and were conscientious about working for. So each lodge, I guess, chooses more or less what their focus will be, maybe depending on the needs of the different jurisdictions. Is that how they, you know, decide, I guess?
Well, charity is one aspect, and it is very much lodge to lodge. But I'm sure everybody's heard of the Shriners Hospital.
Yes.
They all do very good work, and charity is one essential aspect to it. But I would like to say, if anybody is doing research on New York history, because we are the Grand Lodge of New York, we have a lot of material related to New York history with those figures that you mentioned and others. And so we're an excellent resource for research, whether it's Freemasonry related or not.
Right, and you don't realize how one arm branches to another.
That's right.
and embraces it, and it all comes together. And in that context, I should state that as you walk around among the cases in the museum area, there is a lot of text to read, and it behooves you to do that. It's an education, and you can appreciate what you're looking at, why you're looking at it, why it's there, the history of it, the art involved, and it as I say, it spills over into lots of different areas. Now, how much time does the tour of the building take, roughly? I mean, how much time would you need to allot so that if you then want to stay and look at the museum, you would figure on being there, what, about an hour and a half?
I would say an hour is a good time, but you can always cut it short. The tour is done on a first-come, first-served basis, so it can be adjusted to your time limits. And then the library, we're open Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, and Tuesday, Thursday, 12 to 8.
Right.
So if you wanted to come after work, we're open Tuesdays, Thursdays. And we are, like I said, we're open without appointments. So you can walk in before a tour, after a tour, in the middle of a tour,
right.
And we'll be here.
Right. And there are places if you want to sit down, certainly
yes.
In the museum area.
Yes.
And there's somebody at the front desk, and there are people to answer questions and so on. It's very welcoming, very revealing, and I really encourage our listeners to take themselves down to 71 West 23rd Street, go up to the 14th floor, and maybe you'll be lucky and catch a glimpse of Catherine or of Morgan, Morgan in the library, and Catherine moseying around or working hard, curating one aspect or another of the exhibits. And I thank you for being my guests this morning, and I must say that I think there is a dignity and an aura about Masonry that needs to be, understood, for lack of a better word. And this is about the best way I can think of to do that. So this is, it was my pleasure.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And this is Susan Teltzer-Schwartz doing the Metro Beat for WFDU-FM. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to The Metro Beat with your host, Susan Teltzer-Schwartz. Radio Omnibus will be back with another edition next Sunday at this same time. Thank you for listening.